Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and my co-host, as always, Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. This week, we'll look back naturally at England's 9-wicket defeat to Australia in the first Ashes test and look at some of the major talking points that came out of the Brisbane game. We'll get the Australian perspective with cricket writer Ben Horn, and we'll also hear from the captains, Joe Root and Pat Cummins, as well as 400-wicket man Nathan Lyon. As well as that, we'll discuss England's global domination in white ball cricket, domestic white ball cricket, as well as international, with 17 players recently signed for the upcoming Pakistan Super League. So, there's plenty to discuss. As always, you're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Well, Harmy, I know that you've discussed much of this already, on two formats, but you've had time to rest and reflect on England's 9-wicket loss on day four and the fact that they were docked 5 World Test Championship points and got no money. They got fined every cent or dollar of their match fees for a slow over rate. I mean, that is rubbing salt into the wounds.
Absolute salt into the wounds. And I still can't get away from the fact that no matter what Joe or anybody tells me, that was the right thing to do bat first. Wow, that wasn't. I'm sorry. It was the right thing to do bat first for the team to pick, and it was the wrong team to pick, in my opinion. How Broad can't play in that game is just... When people say, oh, sometimes you're a better player for not playing, they are normally right. But this is Stuart Broad on that sort of surface against David Warner, against Australia, and you don't play him. For me, it's madness. They've left themselves wide, wide open. And they're going to do it again at Adelaide. They're going to make a monumental mistake at Adelaide by picking the wrong team again. But we'll come on to that in a second. The 100%, well, when you say it could be worse because in days gone by, the captain would have copped the brunt of it. In England, could be without Joe Root for the next two test matches because of the slow over rate. You know, that would have been a hell of a lot worse from a team point of view than losing every single penny that they've got. Yeah, these guys are well paid. Have I changed my opinion at 24, 48 hours after the game? No. This is alarming, massively alarming from every angle. Who's picking the team? What decisions are made at the team? Everything that goes with it. Yeah, I've got a lot of time for Chris Silverwood. I've got a lot of time. I love Joe Root. I think the world of him, but something's not right here. If they seen that wicket and decided that the best course of action was to bat first and pick Jack Leach on that first morning, then something is not right because it was blatantly obvious. If they thought Jack Leach was going to play in that first test match, two test matches against New Zealand, friendlies, no World Test Championships, got to play. If you're thinking Jack Leach is going to play in the first test in Brisbane, in the Ashes battle, Jack Leach plays every single test match over the summer. This is the biggest, every 2 years you play an Ashes test match, a test series. You have to be ready when you go into it. To go into it without Broad and Anderson and go in with Jack Leach, who hasn't played for you all summer, really, I just think it's like rabbit in the headlight stuff. Yes, they were underprepared. totally unprepared. Australia's batters, 3,800 compared to balls faced, compared to England's 800 since the 1st of September when India went home. That tells its own story. But I'm sorry, I still can't believe the decision that was made in the, at the toss, the team selection, and what they did when they won the toss. It still baffles me.
Well, I tell you what, amongst many things that COVID has changed about the world, the one in cricket is that underpreparedness is no longer an excuse. I think, you know, the practice games and it's all ideal, but it's just no longer an excuse. I think, you know, I think you have to be prepared to be underprepared. Stuart Broad was obviously surprised at his omission, but he said that he didn't think it was right or appropriate to kick up a stink like he did when he was left out in 2020. But he wasn't the only one. Here's Australian captain Pat Cummins on hearing news that that Broad and Anderson weren't playing.
I thought either one of those two would play in every game, if not both of them. So, I mean, obviously we'd done our prep and played against, you know, Wokes a lot and Wood a lot. Probably surprised, but you know, they've got plenty of other bowlers that step in, which pose just the biggest challenge.
That's Pat Cummins admitting that he was surprised, and he didn't say pleasantly surprised, but you can't help drawing that conclusion. It has to be said that it's not with the benefit of hindsight that everybody is now saying that it was peculiar. Anyway, before we discuss it further, this was Joe Root defending his decision to bat first.
I think batting first was the right decision. If you look at how the wickets unfolded, I think, as I say, being 40 for four makes it not look the case. It did quicken up, and we showed that we could create chances that second day. And as you saw today, it did start misbehaving a little bit more. You know, you look at getting 250 even in that first innings, and the game looks very different altogether.
That was Joe Root. He would, wouldn't he? You know, he's not going to admit that it was a dreadful mistake. It just all seemed so peculiar, and the result so predictable. I mean, it was a green wicket 2 days out from the test match when everybody saw it for the first time. It was a green wicket 1 day out, and it was a green and grassy wicket on the morning of the match. And yet England persisted with what seemed to be a premeditated plan, Harmy. And it's not the first time. I share your admiration and affection for the coach and the captain, but it does seem like they make predetermined decisions sometime before they actually need to be made, and then they stick with them come hell or high water.
Absolutely, and that's the worrying thing for me. It has rained for 2 weeks going into Brisbane, and we decided to pick a spin bowler over somebody who would have been making his 150th test match. He's picking his 150th test match for a reason, because he's good. I can understand the Anderson stuff. Jimmy wasn't quite fit, and I understand that. I get that. But you had to gamble on Broad. And you're right. I think it's a predetermined plan that such and such is going to play this game, such and such is going to play the next game, and such is going to play the game after, no matter what the conditions or no matter what how they have performed going into it. It just didn't make sense. We can talk till we're blue in the face about preparation not being great. A lot of people will talk about first-class cricket, because whenever we make a mess in the Ashes, we say our first-class game's not good enough. County cricket's this and county cricket's that. Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. And as much as I want Pat Cummins, as much as Pat Cummins is going to say, yes, we would have batted first on that, but the preparation going into it, there's no way you can justify batting first on that sort of surface. And all they go back to is history. History this and history that. Nasser Hussain gets mentioned more than my first ball in the Ashes in 2006. Nasser Hussain bowled first against Matthew Hayden, Justin Langer and Ricky Ponting. Now, when you look at this, it's not as though England have got Sir Alastair Cook, Sir Andrew Strauss and Jonathan Trott to bat first and get over the first hour. There's only been one person score 100 other than Joe Root in 2021. You haven't got the batting lineup to bat first They're averaging 20s. They're not averaging 30s. They're averaging 20s, most of these England players. So to say, oh, the right decision was to bat first. It's not. You haven't got the bat lineup to bat first. So there's no surprise you were 40 for four. That there just started the whole ball rolling for where England got to.
Yeah, it is frustrating. We've only got a minute left in this section, Harmy. So just very quickly, got two questions for you. If the conclusion is that England aren't good enough, and that's that, it's that simple, then, you know, they need to get back on the plane and come home. So they cannot come to that conclusion. You can't say after one test match, well, we're just not good enough. We can't compete. Your thoughts on that? And also, the return of Ben Stokes. Again, expectations probably just too high, weren't they, after 6 months out?
Expectations, yes, too high. The thing with Ben Stokes, I've heard, and John Norman said it last week in the following on podcast, surely he should have played the ear game and then gone into it. It's like, this is Ben Stokes. You go into Brisbane, when you go into the Brisbane first test match, it's like something you've never experienced before. You know, the feeling, the emotion, first test match, you know, it's like going, it's gladiatorial going into that arena, and you need a gladiator. And for probably the best part of 2 years now, Ben Stokes has carried that England cricket team. It's about time the team carry Ben till he gets up to speed. Yeah, and he wasn't too bad. I thought the first innings, he only faced 18, 19 balls. I thought he shaped up quite nicely in defence. He got turned round by a good ball, and then the second innings, more or less exactly the same. So England needed to carry Ben to get him up to match speed. Preparation, not great, but anybody that turns around and says, you know, England shouldn't have played him, and he should have played a game in between to get him in that position is not right. England needed to carry Ben Stokes to get him up to speed because he carried them. Whether they're not good enough, you know, you're right, they probably aren't good enough. And then question marks are, well, if that's the case, what's the point of taking some of our players who have played a lot of cricket and you try and build for the next series? But this is the Ashes. You can't do that. You have to go with what you've got, the best you possibly can. But you've got to make the right decisions. You've got to make the right decisions. And it was blatantly obvious that the ones that made it, not on hindsight, a lot of people said at 11 o'clock on Wednesday night, when we all sat up and watched it and ready to go, this is the Ashes, we all sat up and said, wow, England have got this horribly, horribly wrong. Not just ex-players, laymans that play club cricket said it before the game started, that, wow, I think England have got this wrong. And what happened? They did.
Yeah, they certainly did. And as promised, discussing that from an Australian point of view now is cricket writer for News Corp Australia, Ben Horn. I know that history suggested that this was always going to happen. Australia have won 9 out of the last 10 Ashes tests on home soil. Did it go very much according to plan as far as you were concerned? And by the way, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Oh, man, it's always a pleasure. Great to see you. Look, I think it did. I mean, the fact that Australia lost that test to India at the Gabba last summer meant we were coming in with a bit more uncertainty about this one. And, you know, with the fact that the two teams had such a crazy preparation, most players hadn't played a single red ball game for 2 or 3 months. So it was a bit hard to know what to expect, really. But look, I think the quality of the Australian bowling attack compared to, I guess, some holes in that England batting lineup was probably, I thought, always going to be the difference. And that's the way it proved. The way Mitchell Starc, Pat Cummins started that first innings, and Josh Hazlewood as well, obviously bowling England out for 147. It was pretty much game over from there.
Now, was that the Travis Head that you know and were expecting to see? Because there were some English fans that said, oh, well, he didn't do very well at Sussex. And they thought that he might be a weak link, ironically enough, as it turned out.
Yeah, well, look, I must admit, I thought they should have picked Usman Khawaja in one of the two positions, probably opening, but if not number 5. But Travis Head was outstanding. And look, I haven't seen as much as others have of him in the Shield competition, but that's what he does in Sheffield Shield cricket. Perhaps not as consistently as perhaps he should, but he's very, very capable. And, you know, his test record isn't that bad. I mean, he's had, I guess, too much inconsistency at that level, but that's his third 100 and he averages over 40. So he's shown he's very capable, and Australia will be hoping that's a bit of a turning point for him and a bit of a breakthrough innings. And if he can do that sort of thing for Australia at number five on a semi-regular basis, it certainly changes the face of the top order.
Changing subject, the way that tours have progressed in the past decades and probably centuries, if you like, is that you start off with your best team, you accept collateral damage, you accept that there will be injuries and a loss of form, and you kind of progress and see what you end up with and make the best of your resources, much like India did in Australia a year ago when they ended up winning with what were described as bowlers who started off as net bowlers. So England have decided to be cleverer than that and not start with their best team. Rather than take what they can from Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad now, they're going to save them up for later. What do you personally, and how would you describe Australians' view of England's new approach?
Oh, there was definitely shock that one of the two of them didn't play. I mean, given Jimmy Anderson's 39 and Stuart Broad's 35 and the way that both of them talked ahead of the series, it was clear that they weren't going to play all five tests. But when Jimmy Anderson got ruled out, you know, no one even contemplated that Stuart Broad also wouldn't be playing. So people were shocked. You know, Glenn McGrath apparently went up to Stuart Broad before play and wished him all the best for his 150th. And it was quite embarrassing, I think, for Stuart to sort of say, oh, mate, I'm actually not playing. So, yeah, it was a shock. And you can't help but think that if Joe Root was to have the guts to bowl first in that match, that he probably needed Broad in the side to have the courage to do that. So I don't know whether it might have even been a double-edged sword in the sense that not having Broad there meant he kind of had to bat as well. So anyway, it was sort of a disastrous result. And yeah, certainly wasn't expected. Thought Broad would be there for sure.
And where do England go from here?
Yeah, look, they've got some more big decisions to make about their attack in Adelaide because Jack Leach, the way Australia took to him, it's going to be difficult for England to keep picking him. But then, you know, can you really go into a match with five seam bowlers? I mean, you know, do they need a point of difference there? Someone sort of changing the pace up a little bit. So they're in a difficult position with the spinner, I think, because Dom Bess, who's the reserve spinner in the squad, I'm not sure that he's going to do a whole lot different to what Jack Leach is doing anyway. So that's become an issue. But look, they have to pick Anderson and Broad for this match. And the way Mark Wood and Ollie Robinson bowled, I'd be playing them too. So, I mean, in terms of Adelaide, I think they've just got to throw everything at it, play their strengths with the fast bowlers, and hopefully they get a bit of luck with the conditions and get those guys bowling under lights.
Let's turn our attention to the Australian team then. This is what Pat Cummins had to say about the importance of Nathan Lyon to his team.
I think he's just about our most important bowler. Wicket-taking option, but also the amount of overs he bowls. I think even yesterday, he bowled without luck, but he went at 2.5 and over for, you know, 20-odd overs on a hot day, which is, you know, a huge asset for us.
Pat Cummins on Nathan Lyon. And now let's hear from the man himself.
There are a couple of challenges there, for sure. He's a very good player off front and back foot, and he sweeps. So it does provide a really decent challenge for spinners to get him caught in the crease there and challenge his defence for a long period of time. But he's the best player in the world at the moment. And as I said, he showed his class out there. And so it's going to be a big, big summer. I've got a huge amount of respect for him and the way he's gone about it. So I'm going to have to make sure that I keep looking at footage, keep planning and try and come up with a few different things for him, that's for sure.
And that's Australian off-spinner Nathan Lyon. I don't know whether the majority of Australians, Ben, regard Nathan Lyon as Australia's third best ever bowler, but there he is on the list.
Yeah, it's a stunning sort of achievement, isn't it, for an off-spinner in Australia to have reached the levels that he has. But yeah, look, he's done an excellent job. I mean, this is in 101 tests, so he's basically going at, you know, 4 wickets a test, which is good in anyone's language. And I think Australia will be better for him having got that milestone, because I actually think it was a factor against India last year. You know, Nathan Lyon is a nervous character, and Mitchell Starc said not so long ago that, you know, when Nathan Lyon was well over 80 tests, it was as if he had 70 debuts. You know, he's one of those guys that really, really does, you know, think about things a lot. So I think the expectation last summer of him building up to his 100th test and 400th wicket was a lot. And, you know, I think now that those milestones are out of the way, you might see a, you know, a more freed up Nathan Lyon and back to the way that we've been used to him bowling the last couple of years. And he certainly looked like that for that second innings in Brisbane.
I read a stat the other day that he was kept waiting on 399 wickets through three COVID mutations.
Yeah, and the 390s for, I think he might have been on 390 before the pandemic even started. So it was a long wait, not helped by the fact, of course, that Australia's barely played any test cricket, which you'd be well aware of, Manus. Yeah, they haven't played much. It's quite interesting. I mean, these guys like Steve Smith and David Warner as well in particular, and Lyon, who only plays test cricket. I mean, these guys, you know, barely played over the last couple of years. And, you know, Smith and Warner on top of the ban they already served. It's a lot of cricket to be missed for guys who are at the top of their game.
And finally, I think it was you that that broke the news, or at least first announced the news, that Josh Hazlewood would be out of the team. I'm assuming that David Warner will be fit and will open the batting. And are we right in assuming that Jai Richardson will take Hazlewood's place?
Yeah, that's the way it's looking, man. It looks like Jai Richardson will play. Michael Nesta, who's the other bowler in the squad, if he was to play test cricket, this would have seemed his best chance. He's very good mover of the ball. So under lights, he would be dangerous. He's also a bit of a like-for-like for Hazlewood, but he's just an unlucky man, unfortunately, Michael Nesta. There's always a reason to leave him out. But look, Jai Richardson's form during the domestic start of the season in Australia was excellent. So it's hard to deny him. He's played two tests before and really looked the part against Sri Lanka in 2019. Had a terrible shoulder injury that's basically held him back until now. But, you know, he's a very good bowler. Yeah, David Warner, he's definitely not 100%. I mean, he's going to have to bat in the nets on Tuesday here in Adelaide and see how he moves, really. So they haven't called in another spare batsman. Usman Khawaja is the man on standby. I think they're expecting Warner to play, but it's not over the line yet. And, you know, he's certainly going to be playing in a bit of discomfort.
Ben Horn, like most of the media, you weren't actually at the Gabba, but hopefully you will be able to actually genuinely be on tour for the rest of the Ashes. Enjoy it. I hope to be able to catch up with you again during the course of the series. And I'm assuming that you're along the in the Glenn McGrath 5-0 camp now, are you?
Yeah, I think the way it went in Brisbane, you'd have to think that way. I mean, look, this is England's big chance, I think. Even though Australia's never lost a pink ball test, if England are to do it, they have to win in Adelaide and, you know, take their chances from there.
Thanks, Ben. Enjoy the rest of the tour.
Thanks, Manus.
That was cricket writer Ben Horn from News Corp Australia. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. Still to come in part three, we'll look ahead to India's test series against South Africa. But next up, we'll discuss what changes England should make for Thursday's second test in Adelaide. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness.
If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show so far or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast, as always, from the Following On feed, now available via the free TalkSport app. Further conversations about England's opening defeat to Australia at the Gabba and looking forward to the second test match. England, the consolation, I suppose, is that England can't get it so wrong again, surely. You have just said that you are expecting them to get it wrong again for the pink ball test at Adelaide. It's a test they absolutely have to win. They just have to win it. So why this sense of foreboding, Harmy?
I've got a funny feeling they're not going to play Mark Wood, and that will make it a whole lot worse. Do you know what, Manners? I hear this, right? I heard it off Chris Silverwood, and I hear this all the time. The Ashes is a long series. The Ashes is, it's a marathon, not a sprint. They're wrong. It is a sprint. The Ashes is 11 days long because you can lose it in 11 days. Nasser Hussain lost it in 11 days. You ask Andrew Flintoff, lost it in 11 days. If you don't get it right at the start, it's gone. It could be gone by lunchtime on Boxing Day. It really could. And that's a sprint. That's the thing that people, for me, I can't understand when I hear Chris Silverwood say it's a long series. It's not, Chris. The series is gone by Boxing Day, on lunchtime on Boxing Day, if you do not get this right. You know, we've had 3.5 days here. We could have 4 days in Adelaide if it swings around. And if you lose a toss and you're miles behind the game at lunchtime on Boxing Day, you've got to win 3 test matches to win the Ashes. You're not going to win 3 test matches by lunchtime on Boxing Day if you lose in Adelaide and you lose a toss in Australia 100 for none on day one. The Ashes has gone by then. So keeping bowlers and being funky with your team doesn't make much sense. England have to drop Mark Wood, which is the biggest monumental mistake that I was going to say something else there, but I can't. It's radio and it's live radio. And it's they have to play Chris Wokes. It showed you the way Australia bowl at the tail enders that Ollie Robinson is not a number 8. He's a number 9. We can't play with four number 9s, 4 number 10s if you bring Broad and Anderson back in. So you have to play Chris Wokes at number 8, because I actually thought Chris Wokes' batting was as accomplished as anybody else's on that day, given in that test match, other than sort of that for that 3-hour period of Milan and Root. So Wokes has to play. You play Broad in the first test match, and then you just swap Broad and Anderson for the second test match. You keep firepower, you keep your batting, you keep your balanced attack. But I've got a funny feeling England they're either going to have to drop Ollie Robinson or they're going to have to drop Mark Wood. Now, Robinson bowled well in that first test match. And I actually think, even though St. Lucia, when we were all there, and it was great, the Mark Wood got 5 for not very many, and he was pointing up to the TalkSport box, and he enjoyed himself. He had a great day. I actually thought, at Brisbane, that's the best I've seen Mark Wood in an England shirt. His pace was up. He was aggressive into lengths. He put the frighteners up David Warner. David Warner had roller skates on facing Mark Wood. And he knocked Steve Smith over. Steve Smith averaged 130 in Ashes cricket in the last three or four series. He knocked him over. But I don't see how the balance of this attack and team can get Broad, Anderson and Wood in the same team without playing Chris Wokes. So it's either Wood or Robinson. And I think they want to play Robinson because it was either Robinson or Broad for the first test match, and they went with Robinson. So we'll go with Robinson again. I've just got a funny feeling that they're not going to play our fast lad. And why is that relevant? Because everybody goes on about the ping ball. It's going to swing. It's going to go round corners. It's going to do all sorts. For 2.5, nearly 3 hours of every single day, 5 days, it's going to be played in blazing sunshine on a flat pitch in Adelaide, and the ball's going to do nothing. All of a sudden, when the lights take effect and it gets to later on, that's when the ball's going to swing. England might bowl. This is the beauty about day and night cricket. You have to score runs for your captain to dictate when the best time is to bowl, declare, and everything that goes with it. If you're bowling at the wrong time, you don't need swing bowlers. You need something with a bit of difference. And that is something that England won't have if they leave Mark Wood out.
We've just had it confirmed that Jimmy Anderson is almost certainly playing because it's been announced that he's going to be doing the pre-test media duties. Just before we move on from Joe Root, not surprisingly, he was adamant that England are not too far away from competing and indeed winning against Australia.
There were periods of this game where we showed that we're more than capable of getting on top of Australia. We just didn't do it for long enough. And we're always behind the game after that first hour. We've got to make sure that we keep parity and get ahead of the game early on in the game. And then, you know, back ourselves to take those opportunities. When you create as much as we did with the ball, you look at Mark Wood, 23 times he beat the bat in his first 24 overs. That's impressive. You know, we're doing a lot of things right, the way Ollie Robinson bowled and, you know, changed the game with that spell just after the break. We're not far away. I'm not just trying to make things up. I genuinely believe that if we take our chances better and we handle that initial first innings better, we could be sat here in a very different position.
England captain Joe Root being naturally optimistic. Now, you just heard me put the point to Ben Horne, Harmy, that, you know, for decades, for centuries, what cricket teams on tour did was start with their best team, accept that there would be some collateral damage and losses through injury, and then, you know, see how they pull up at the end when make do with the best of what is left. England decided that they knew a better way, and they're saving some of their best stuff till later in the tour. It kind of made sense, but if it made that much sense, I think it would have been tried decades ago.
Again, I keep coming back to this when people say, you know, it's a long tour. It's not a long tour. If you don't get the first 12 days right, the Ashes is gone. No point saving somebody and no point keeping somebody for the fourth and fifth test match if you've already relinquished the Ashes, if you've already given it up. And that's why you've got to gamble on potential bodies. You've got to gamble on what you perceive as taking a little bit of a risk to make sure that you've got a fighting chance of winning. Everything I've said when it comes to the Mark Wood and the Broad and Anderson is irrelevant if you don't score runs. That's England's biggest problem. England's biggest problem is not about how to shoehorn your four best bowlers into a team. England's problem is, how am I going to get 250 runs first innings, never mind 400 runs, to survive and keep in the test match to give myself the best chance to win? So we can talk, you can go round and round in circles, talk till you're blue in the face about what's the best team and what's not the best team and he should be playing or whatever. It comes back to the fact that fundamentally the game is about scoring runs.
And finally, just very quickly in this section, do you think that the absence of Josh Hazlewood will help England's top order? You know, Jai Richardson's a very, very fine bowler, a bit different, skiddier, swings it more. But Hazlewood has been their nemesis.
Yeah, and a lot has talked about the Hazlewood Stark Cummins partnership, and it is, that is as good as you'll get in world cricket for me. That's a beauty. All the talk of Broad and Anderson coming back, play day night cricket, and it's going to swing round corners, and we've got a chance, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. But hold on the other side, they're not bad. In fact, they're better. And I've heard comments of Jai Richardson's probably going to help because he swings it more than Josh Hazlewood. Josh Hazlewood is a fine, fine bowler. He's one of the best bowlers in the world. So for him to be out, that's a bonus for England. Richardson can hoop around corners as much as he wants. He's not Josh Hazlewood. He's not delivering the ball from 2 metres plus. And that in Australia is what makes these bowlers so potent. You know, the height that they deliver it from, the skill sets that they've got, the areas that they bowl, and the togetherness that Stark, Cummins, and Stark was off at Brisbane. He was second innings, he was off a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see how the balance of this attack goes with Richardson in. If he starts going around the park and so does Stark, then there's a lot of pressure on Pat Cummins. And for about 3 or 4 hours in the middle of that day when Root were going well, we've seen a little bit of Australia cracking and Cummins cracking. He was a bowler down, didn't know when to bowl Lyon, didn't really want to. Yeah, Green got him out of trouble a little bit. We've seen a little bit of Australia cracking when England came back at them in that session. Just England didn't come back at them enough. But for Hazlewood to miss, that's a huge miss for Australia.
And finally, confirmation for those of you who haven't heard that Hobart will host the fifth test match and it will be a day-nighter. It has to be a day-nighter because when it was scheduled for Perth, that means it's prime advertising time on the more populous eastern seaboard, that's Melbourne, Sydney. So they basically sold the advertising in prime time. That means that now that it's being played in Hobart, it has to be a day-nighter in order to sell those or to stick to those times. So Hobart will host its first ever Ashes Test match. Let's, as promised, discuss England's impact globally in white ball cricket. It was only 2015 when England was the laughingstock of the world's white ball cricket after the ignominious performance at the 2015 World Cup. But now there are England players leading the way in domestic white ball cricket around the world, 12 playing in the Big Bash. Alex Hales has just become the leading international run scorer in BBL history. 17 England players have been drafted into playing the upcoming Pakistan Super League. It is, I know that there's a sense that England players are the flavour of the month, Army, but it's they're delivering. It used to be Australian players. Do you remember in the IPL, no IPL franchise was complete without its quota of Australian players. And some of them, in all truth, were pretty ordinary. It's just the fact that they were Australian that they were getting a gig. They just had to be a mate with Shane Warne. But England players are everywhere and they are delivering. Quite a turnaround.
Yeah, it just sums up where Test match cricket is. When you see things like that, it's England's white ball game is unreal. Pool of players is unreal. It's nearly as big. It's nearly as big and as good as what India's, if not better than what India's pool of players are for the white ball game, which is frighteningly good when you watch the IPL. Is that to the detrimental fact of Test match cricket? It probably is. I think England need a reset when it comes to the thought process towards Test match cricket. You watch the TV, the documentaries that have been on, and there's some fantastic documentaries on. Nasser Hussain does a lot of it, and he talks about in the 90s, if you play Test match cricket well, you got rewarded with a game in the one-day side. Where now it seems you get rewarded for a game in the test side off the back of one day cricket because we are so good at one day cricket. We pick our players off the back of that. Is that showing? I think it probably is. When you look at Milan and you look at Butler, you look at, and you have two prime examples. Probably the two that forgo that, you look at Pope, he's got a lot of runs getting into first class cricket, getting into the test side. And you look at Burns, somebody who in the last 5 years before he got selection for the England team, he had 5 years of 1,000 runs in first class cricket leading into consecutive 1,000 runs leading into the side. So he earned the place in the side that goes with it. Is that our problem? Is that the point that our first class game isn't producing players, or is it producing players? I'm not so sure. But when you look at the times I've played, yes, you just had to be Australian and you got a gig in county cricket. I remember at Durham, we had probably 5-6 Australians who got a test cap after playing for us. I'm thinking a 20-year-old Simon Kettig, thinking a young Martin Love. Brad Hodge played for Durham before he went on to play for Australia. So they were all then, for every one of them names I've just mentioned, every single county seemed to have one of these Australians who couldn't get in. And when you look at the Australian side at the time, I played against it. It wasn't a bad side. Hayden Langer, Ponton, Martin, you know, Steve Ward, Michael Clark. It was a very, very difficult side to get in. That we seem to be like that in one day cricket, but we're not like that in test match cricket. And I think that's showing at this minute in time. So it's great that these guys are getting gigs around the world. It's great that in the franchise stuff, that they are the box office names, because when they come back into English cricket, it's going to help our young players play better if you're going in with the likes of, as much as Alex Hales will never ever play cricket for England again, if he's playing in dressing rooms around the world, then his skill set's coming back and he's giving his knowledge to some of the young players and making our young players better. So it can only benefit English cricket in that front in the white ball game. But unfortunately, we're on an Ashes, we're one test match in an Ashes, it's all doom and gloom. We need players to stand up in the red ball game.
So success in the white ball cricket, it seems, you make it sound like it's almost mutually exclusive to success in red ball cricket and having a successful test team being competitive in the Ashes. You know, it seems that white ball success, and the more it grows, excludes or at least seriously harms England's chances of being successful at test cricket.
It does. And is there a fine balance? Can we have success at both? I think India do that. India do that very, very well. Have India just got better cricketers than what we have? That their multi-format players are as good at red ball cricket than they are at white ball cricket? Do we need to make sure that we've got a red ball team and a white ball team? I'm not sure what the answer is there, but at this minute in time, you know, these are our best players, but something has to be driven into changing the outlook of white ball to red ball. You know, we've never replaced the likes of Cook, Strauss and Trott at the top of our order. In 18 months' time, we're going to have to replace over 1,100 test match wickets. Where's the next Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad's coming from? The answer to that is they're not coming, because there's nobody going to be as good as Broad or Anderson. But we need to find out who these next cricketers are who are going to take on Australia when Australia come to England in 2 years' time. It's all about Ashes cricket in Red Bull. You know, you're judged on what you're doing in and against Australia. And at this minute in time, trying to be funky is just not working. You pick your best team. While you've got Broad and Anderson, you utilise them because they're the best at what we've got. And we look deeper into where the red ball game is. Is it as simple as we are just not picking the right red ball cricketers? Are there players out there that we're not picking in the red ball game who are probably going to make us better in the long term if we stick with them rather than just have a short-term quick fix? Because actually, he plays well against the white ball. He's good in the environment of white ball pressurized situation. So he must be a good cricketer to play test matches. Test match arena is a completely different animal to the white ball game. It is a different game. You know, you need different skill sets, and you also need concentration levels and execution of skill sets over a longer period. And that's why sometimes the likes of, great example, Jason Roy, has not met it at test level. Great white ball players, but unfortunately, the test match arena is a completely different game.
Okay, mountain to climb. Talking of which, India are the best team in the world. I think it's generally accepted. Multi-format, greatest depth, some of the best individuals. But somehow the crown just slips a little because they have yet to conquer one remaining hurdle, and that is winning in South Africa. They've won in Australia twice. They've won in England. They've been to South Africa seven times for test match tours and have yet to win. They've managed one draw and have lost six times. That series kicks off on Boxing Day with the first test match at Centurion Park and then two more tests at the Wanderers and at Newlands. It's a massive, massive series. It just looks a little like the Indian team internally might be having a few wobbles, with Virat Kohli being replaced as ODI captain unexpectedly by Rohit Sharma. Rohit Sharma has also become Kohli's test vice captain, replacing Ajinkya Rahane. So internally, it just looks as if there are a few wobbles going on there. But if they can win in South Africa in the test series, they will, I think, indisputably become known as one of the best teams of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think it's the right thing. The wonder when you think about it properly, I think it's the right thing that Virat Kohli has either he stepped aside or they've stepped him aside from all white ball games. They've got a new coach trying to move forward, take pressure off Virat. The one thing that the world can't have is Virat Kohli not captain of the test team. The ICC and world cricket need Virat Kohli to be captain of India's test team because he drives test match cricket forward. I think if you've not got a captain of India who has so much, has any disregard for test match cricket, then you'll see test match cricket just starting to fall by the wayside. Kohli loves test match cricket. He thinks test match cricket's the pinnacle and he plays it in such a way. I think with a new coach coming in, I actually think it's not a bad thing for India to, and for Virat Kohli, more importantly, that he just lets Rohit Sharma take the reins as the white ball captain, and you know Virat goes and enjoys his cricket. I don't see him going anywhere soon. He is such a fit. He looks a fit character. He looks a strong character. He looks as though his hunger for the game is still there. He will play in every 2020 game. He'll play in every one day game, and he'll play in every test match that, you know, India want to select him, and he's a modern day great. He's one of the best players of my lifetime. So I don't think this is a bad thing for Indian cricket. If India don't beat South Africa this time, that's it. They'll never beat them because this is their best chance. They're never ever going to get a better chance to beat South Africa than what they've got because of the players that they've got to go. And again, a little bit like England, sometimes they'll pick the wrong side, but I think India, the pool of players they've got, going to South Africa with a little bit of turmoil that South Africa have got, because in the next cycle, a lot of South African players that have done the Co-Pack will be back playing and make South Africa stronger. I think this is the best chance that India will have for a long time to beat South Africa in South Africa, and I think they will beat them.
I think you could be right there. So Rishabh Pant, Jasprit Bumrah, Mohammad Shami and KL Rahul all returned to the Indian Test squad, having been rested against New Zealand, while Ajay Jadeja, Shubman Gill and Akshar Patel all miss out due to injury. And South Africa have named a squad of 21 for the three Test series. And the only mention that Yorkshire get on this week's programme is that Yorkshireman Dwan Olivier, the fast bowler who played for them under a Co-Pack contract for the last 3 years, he is back in the South African squad, but certainly not guaranteed a place in the starting 11. South Africa have named a squad of 21, including three spinners. They certainly don't need to pack for match day. You've been listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast as always from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back, as I said, on Wednesday for a full preview to Thursday's second Ashes test. This has been The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.